not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. I'm going to play a short report, a two-minute report from our friends at Free Press. They're coming to town in April, and if you haven't heard about this yet, you should hear about it right now, so stay tuned. That will last about 2 minutes. And then getting WMBR back on the rights, we're going to have a little bit of a test. We're not going off the air, but we will be having some tones. And it's not an emergency, so it won't be emergency tones. But you'll hear some tones that will remind you that you should remember to tune in to Nonstop Ecstatic Screaming every Thursday, I believe at 8 p.m., if I'm not mistaken, here on 88.1 FM WMBR in Cambridge. And now let's hear this report from our friends at Free Press. Oh, I won't be here next week, but Chuck, you will be filling in, so you'll be in good hands. Peace. Okay, that's not what we're playing here.
In just a few short months, hundreds of people from all over the country will be descending on Boston for the 5th National Conference for Media Reform, a 3-day conference in April devoted to the intersections of media, technology, and democracy. Kara Lisa Berg-Powers, the co-director of the nonprofit youth media organization Press Pass TV in Boston, is also a member of the local host committee helping to organize the conference with Free Press. Powers first attended NCMR in 2008 in Minneapolis as a scholarship recipient. She had a powerful experience and said the conference is a critical organizing space for people who want better media for their communities.
To me, the most important thing about conferences is the ability to sort of re-energize and rededicate people to their collaborative work. Getting to talk to organizations that have been around a lot longer than us was really inspiring for us and helped to not reinvent the wheel, but also connect you to a whole network of people so that you don't feel isolated in your work.
This year, the conference will include nearly 300 speakers and performers and will give folks the opportunity to attend workshops and panels about creating new media models, supporting public journalism, preserving free speech online, and building a more diverse media landscape. For Powers, NCMR also holds a special place in her heart. It's where she met her husband, Jordan Berg Powers, then outreach coordinator for Free Press.
We got to talk a few times over the 3 days that we were there in Minneapolis and then exchanged information and started dating soon after, and now been happily married for a year and a half.
As powerful corporations take control of the internet and the mainstream media produces vapid reporting and often inflammatory punditry, Powers says now is the critical time to organize for a better future.
We're at a real turning point moment right now where those of us that believe that the media can feed a more positive vision of our lives and our communities need to come together and really talk about how we bring it back to that. So I think that if you think you should come, you probably should, and that we need your voice in that conversation.
The conference will be held at the Boston Seaport April 8th through 10th. To find out more and to register for the conference, visit freepress.net. To find out about Power's organization, visit presspasstv.org.
And now a test of the WMBR whatever system. Was fun.
Rootsy, as defined by the Oxford Dictionary, is a musical colloquialism meaning uncommercialized, unadulterated, full-blooded, and traditional. Yep, sounds like fancy talk for the kind of music you'll hear on Lost Highway every Saturday from 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Great 88 WMBR in Cambridge.
Man, slow down. We'll get there.
With us today is Erno, the potions master.
Hello, Aurora. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. And how are you today?
I am very calm. I feel like doing a calm, motionless dance with my mind.
Excellent. And how does one dance in a motionless mental capacity?
It usually involves the imbibulation of many, many potions. And then once the potions rid your mind of control of your body, only your mind can dance.
And here to dance with us today also is Zoro the numerologist.
Thank you for having me on the show again. It is quite nice. I am thrilled, in fact, to dance my mind with yours.
Refreshing.
As all mental dances, refreshing is in the mind, in the motion, in the mental ligaments.
I think in this week, a reflection on our meditative abilities is in order, as Dr. Jollis is away on his meditative retreat.
Yes, and in fact, with himself he has taken... He's taken himself away from us, WNBR, in Cambridge.
But he is still here, spiritually.
Yes, indeed, as all of us are.
However, in the physical realm, we must carry on without him this week, and that is exactly what we shall do.
I think it is a good quality, though, to exercise. It is perhaps what makes us fundamentally human, that we may overcome deliberately these obstacles.
Yes, it is very much like the relationship between parent and child. Dr. Jollis is like a father to us all.
Well, an additional fact that most listeners may not be aware of is that Dr. Jollis does meditate strongly and send out positive reinforcement, and his near physicality when he does so before every show, in fact, guarantees that all mishaps that occur, occur with smiles.
And grace, indeed, I believe this is so.
And not with tribulation.
Sensations that in childhood brought us joy and delight, but which to many in the region brings only frustration and aggravation. And I refer, of course, to adults going to work. As children, we always enjoyed our parents going to work, for it meant that we were free.
Yes, my father, who was also an eminent potionologist, as he would leave home, he would leave me free to find his store of potions as a teenager. And as I would open the bottles and do my own study of potionology, I slowly fell in love with the magic concoctions he left around the house. And that is what has driven me into my current career.
And was there any particular sensation or color or ingredient which most brought about your delights?
Potions vary in color and ingredient, but one thing was very common in all of my potions. The ones I enjoy the most are always dark brown or amber in color.
And does this color have any significance, any spiritual or physical?
No, but the potions that I focus on in my career usually invoke warming sensations in the body.
Perhaps our numerologist can give us an idea.
I was about to say, I think that the brown and the amber are quite guarding colors. They will protect and invoke a sensation of the hearth, of the warmth.
Yes, indeed. And another thing common to many of the potions I like to drink is the presence of bubbles. They have a lifting sensation, and they help my soul to escape from the physical form, if only for a moment, to escape the troubles of reality and to soar to the higher plane.
Yes, this higher plane, it is what we are always seeking.
I notice that many times when I can't get my hands on one of my potions and I cannot ascend, that I become very, very cross, very angry, and sometimes take it out on those around me.
That is quite unfortunate, I think.
Yes, I believe it is. It has something to do with, once you enter into this higher plane, the world, the physical world around us, is no longer enough.
Yes.
You always seek the spiritual enlightenment that you once felt.
There is a trick to this. We are always trying to transcend and to become higher, but it is important, I think, sometimes to remember, in the process of becoming higher, sometimes you must simply learn to live lower. It is perhaps the word is Spartan or something.
Yes, I sometimes ask myself, could I just pick up and leave my potions anytime I want and go on another career? And many people tell me, no, you are very attached to your potions and to your work, and you would never be able to quit your job. But I tell them, yes, I could quit my potionology career anytime I want to.
So this is interesting.
You go on a pilgrimage. Many don't believe me, but I feel it in my heart that I could indeed leave the academic field I've chosen for myself and just wander.
And yes, you have such a passion.
Yes, yes.
And it is important to remember, as unified as we all are, that passions must not be ignored, that we must allow ourselves to immerse ourselves in what makes us truly happy.
In the potions.
In the potions, or the numbers, or the voices, the sounds.
Have either of you ever been in a position where you found it hard to notice that, or to find the thing that makes you happy? Have you ever lost it and had to find it again?
I believe all of us have, and that's what really truly makes finding that thing, that passion, so fulfilling and so incredibly important.
Yes, I think that it is a fundamental part of the human condition, actually. Life, it is so that life is not about having these things which we want, but it is about looking for them.
Indeed, and when I was a young girl, as I've mentioned before on the show, I had speech impediments. I had problems with my intonation, and I had a horrible stutter.
I'm very, very sorry.
Well, you should not be, for it was really that guided me to where I am today. And I had an interesting conversation yesterday with one of my clients who was telling me she was suffering from great depression. And I wish to relate to all of you here what she has said and perhaps discuss it in some way. She said to me, "There has been a scientific study that shows that when a person becomes richer, for example, they are happy for a short period of time, and then again they reach unfulfillment. Of course, we are discussing people who have not reached a spiritual balance in any way, but perhaps this can be expressed in our everlasting strive to go higher and to reach higher planes."
Well, I think that there is something of a metaphor which explains the situation. Imagine that you are in a desert and that you are searching for something and you see it at the top of a great sand dune. Yes. And you want it so badly that you run up the side. And as you run, you push the sand down, but you do not make progress. And it caused maybe perhaps an avalanche of some kind?
Well, this is not quite exactly what she was telling me. She continued to tell her story, but this would be more like finding an oasis when you are dreading thirst and drinking your fill, but then wanting better water.
Yes, but I think that it is this fast struggle for enlightenment, these quick changes which are more transient after a fashion. If you are slow and careful with your progress, you may find the ground more solid.
Well, let me continue what she said.
Of course, go ahead.
Finish the story. So she said, "The only way to achieve true happiness, according to this, if you are ever to be dissatisfied with what you have, which is apparently the human condition, then the only true way to achieve heaven or paradise is to be in a condition which exponentially improves." And then she said, "And perhaps to feel the depths and despair of hell, one must be in a condition in which they can periodically feel happiness, so that they can feel the true depths of despair, which are otherwise their life."
It is something like a tickle torture.
Yes, one must be happy in order to understand the trueness of the misery they are in. And then she said, "But does this not mean that we are truly living hell in the here and now?"
That is an interesting point.
Yes, this reminds me of a very personal story. My previous wife, when she was still living with me, was very jealous about my passion for my work, and one night, while I was out, she took all of my potions and poured them down the drain, and I was extraordinarily angry with her.
Yes, but of course.
I believe the whole experience is a positive, because without it I wouldn't realize how much I enjoy my work and how much I love making and testing potions.
So your story is perhaps the opposite a little bit. You have something which you appreciate more because it has been taken away, as opposed to appreciating your life less because it is punctuated by joy.
And this is something that I think really illustrates the difference between positive, healthy thinking and something which will allow you to slip into a feeling of hopelessness. It is important to concentrate on those happy moments and to concentrate on the fact that this allows us to better ourselves.
Yes, my point is that we should also take the bad moments and not necessarily concentrate on them, but think of them look at them in a different light.
To appreciate them.
Yes, that they provide the reference so that we could see how happy the happy moments truly are.
You know, this talk of exponential growth and of light, it reminds me, the current scientific understanding of the universe begins with the Big Bang. And you said earlier in the program, Aurora, that humans perhaps must experience exponential light in order to find true happiness. But the current scientific understanding is that the universe began with the exponential growth of pure light. And I think that that is a sign of the beauty of the universe in which we are.
That is a very interesting point. And now the universe is in a state of what?
I am not sure. It depends upon the scale at which you look. Perhaps if you are able to zoom back and see it all, it is still exponential. I would like to hope so.
I wonder, have either of my co-hosts ever thought they found their passion and then realized it was not their passion? I remember back in my days of youth that I was sure, completely and utterly positive, that my passion was ballet dance. But then I tasted my first potion and realized that was the life for me.
And I think that this happens when people fall in love as well. Each new person, you feel as if this is the ultimate person and you are truly and deeply in love with them. And then you recall the person before and you realize, no, that was a much lesser love. And so the love for ballet was a true love deep within you, but it was a lesser love to your love of potions. And this happens to us all.
Yes, I think this comparison with the human tendency to love and to love more is quite apt. And it is also somewhat like our search for transcendence, in that many times we think that we have discovered how we will live our life, the principles on which we will base our actions and this sort of thing. But continual growth still happens. And it is quite interesting to see that the ultimate end is almost never reached. It's a matter of constant growth.
If anyone would like to grow with us or to share the experiences which have been troubling, or indeed to just call in and talk with us, our number is 617-253-8810, and we have two lines open.
Yes, and of course you're not obligated to talk. You may chant or perhaps hum if you prefer.
I've been wondering, and perhaps, Sora, you have some knowledge on this, about the shape of the universe. Let us attempt to increase the shape of ourselves.
Let us expand our universe.
Perhaps we have not reached this color. As far as I know, this is still an open question.
So perhaps the shape of the universe is within the shape of our brain, that we can describe it as we see fit. And what would that shape say about us all?
You know, it is an interesting question. It is not sure if the universe is within the mind or the mind is within the universe.
Let's try that caller again. Caller, are you with us?
I think I am.
Caller, could you step away from your radio, please?
I can try. How's that?
Much better, thank you.
Well, I would like to speak to the connection between the brain and the universe.
Oh, yes, of course, please.
It has been purported previously that perhaps the brain is constructed as a hologram, and perhaps the universe is constructed as a hologram, and perhaps our perception of the universe has something to do with that hologram being projected from somewhere else.
Now, what sort of a hologram?
The sort that can be divided anyway and still contain the entirety of itself.
Every
aspect of it.
Something of a fractal, I believe this is the shape. I think perhaps I have heard of this series. They say something about the black holes and the surface of a black hole containing a hologram. Yes, it is quite possible. I am not an expert on the connection between the two, but it seems quite apparent to me that both the mind and the universe may be contained within these holograms. It certainly reminds me of the chaos which comes when one falls asleep and is subject to the dreams of reality.
And many unexplainable things that have yet to be explained would make sense under this theory.
I wonder what all of your opinions are on the theory that the universe can be controlled with the mind. There are many I've met who believe such a thing.
Well, if you think about it, we are all controlling the universes with our minds. We are all committing actions, and those actions come from deep within our minds, and our actions cause a ripple, a cascade of other actions, and so the universe changes.
Yes, I like this image of the ripple. Sometimes people will evoke a stone which is thrown upon a pond and the waves which spread from it. I think it is quite a good image.
Indeed. And if we're all within this hologram together, then indeed our minds are all together creating it.
Yes, in this case, it is quite apparent that indeed the mind can influence the universe if the mind is one with the universe.
This is such a beautiful image, caller.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing it.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Maybe we are not all just one with the universe, but through that, we are all one with each other.
And everything within that universe.
And we are an embodiment of the universe, an embodiment of one another, and the entirety of all of creation.
Is this your mind? Pardon, you may go.
Yes, caller.
I'm just wondering what sensations you're feeling right now.
I was reminded of the snow which has come recently in Boston. There was even more of it today. And the interesting effect, when the snow comes down, it is quite smooth and very nice surface, you know. Mm-hmm. But then we disrupt it. Humankind, we go and we shovel it from the sidewalks and so on, and it becomes more rough and less palatable, I think. And then the roads and the cars, they make it dirty. It's interesting.
Yes, we turn it into a burden when it's a gift.
Indeed.
Exactly.
We take the beautiful, pristine world around us and make it ugly and horrid. Perhaps this is an insight.
Well, I'm feeling rather differently myself. I'm feeling at once rather larger than life and timid and excited and afraid.
Hmm.
I believe this description of the universe has done this.
Perhaps every moment we have the choice to change it however we want.
It's funny how the same image can affect two people in very different ways. I, on the other hand, feel as small as a pea. Very aggressive and bored.
You know, it's interesting. Under certain circumstances, with these potions, I have uncovered the ability, I believe, to change the universe at will. But unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, you may say, each time that I reach this state, I decide that the universe is as it is and that I want it to be that way.
And it doesn't change?
I do not wish it to be so, and it seems perhaps to be a large coincidence, but perhaps it is the right way of things.
Well, it's not only your surface mind, but your deep mind, your inner spiritual mind, that can make all of these decisions. So perhaps your surface mind is telling you that you wish one thing, when in fact you wish for something else.
Let's have another caller.
Hello?
Caller, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm on the air. Let me turn my radio down.
Yes, thank
you.
I
love the show. I've encountered it recently after hot yoga class, so it's hard for me to tell where yoga ends and the show begins because they become fused together on Friday nights.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you for calling in.
Do you guys have any thoughts that all the snow we've received lately might be some sort of mothership, alien invasion, white color falling down on us to give us some sort of a lesson on ourselves, whether we need to just shovel the snow and be angry with it, or whether we can let it rest on our cars very peaceful-like and, you know, with nice salutations?
Well, Color, I'm very glad that you brought this up, and I have had some similar notion that the snow is attempting to teach us a lesson. And in fact, not this fall, but the fall before, I decided to take that lesson. And instead of going out and being upset and allowing my shoes to get wet, I built an igloo for a homeless man. I built him shelter, and it was warm, and it was beautiful. And I believe if more of us attempted to go out and just build things and engage with the snow and with Mother Nature and this beautiful white tundra, that we could learn to enjoy our lives and the universe as it is.
Yes.
That is quite an interesting escapade.
Well, I think the snow mirrors our souls and our spirits to a degree. How comfortable are we in our center, in our core, and
yes.
And we find the boots and the snow jackets and the resilience and the spiritual oil fields to go out and build an igloo for a homeless person.
And I think that it is no coincidence that we like to use the phrase Mother Nature when we refer to these things such as the weather. I think that this image of the weather, which is attempting to communicate and to teach us how to be more at peace with the universe, is quite realistic, in fact.
Yes. Yes. And I was just wondering if you guys were from an alien vessel with temporary parking passes in one of the cities. What alien vessel, what galaxy would you be from?
Now, caller, what is to say that we are not from an alien vessel?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
What is to say that we are not all from an alien vessel?
This is true. Nothing is to say.
I believe there are actually some origin series of life which say that humankind, and in fact all life on Earth, perhaps have been seeded from a comet or something like this, which comes to the Earth with all sorts of chemicals and creates as a seed all the things necessary for life to begin.
Yes.
So it is perhaps true that we are from another place. I know that personally, I think that if I was from somewhere else, it would be in the vicinity of Betelgeuse.
It's funny. I would say the same thing. We are quite on the same page, Zorro. I've always been partial to the constellation Orion.
What about Caller 1 and Caller 2? What would you guys...
Oh, there are multiple aliens on the line. I thought there was just the three of us.
Oh, there are. Caller 1, are you still with us?
She may have caught her ship.
It's interesting. I feel as if I can still sense her presence, but perhaps we have lost.
She has already entered warp drive to travel back home.
Caller 2... What do you think you would look like if your inner self were expressed physically?
If my inner self were what?
To be expressed physically.
I think I'd look a lot like I do now.
That's an interesting observation. I think it is a sign that you are quite mentally healthful in that you are very comfortable within your own identity.
Thank you. I try to find a center.
I always thought that my inner being would be best expressed or visualized as some form of cartoon rodent.
Any particular rodent? A bat, perhaps?
The flying rodent is indeed a good metaphor for one who transcends to other planes as we do, but I like to think of myself more as a flying squirrel, someone who sees the higher plane, who reaches it time to time, but then inevitably must fall back down to Earth.
This is definitely a good metaphor, I think, for the human condition and the constant struggle which we all fight against our own unhappiness.
And I would be a cartoon because many times I feel that after I've reached the higher plane, this world seems almost two-dimensional.
That's quite interesting. I thought perhaps that you would say that we are all products of society, the society we are raised in, much like the cartoon is a product of mankind as well.
That is another good way to look at it, indeed.
I have a simple question about the higher planes.
Yes, please, caller.
Sometimes in sleep, I get there, and it's like I'm there, and as soon as some faculty inside me becomes conscious that I'm there, I'm not there anymore.
Yes, and perhaps you have a sudden awakening. You feel as if you are falling or something, and then poof.
This is actually a very common phenomenon, caller. It is called the meta-awakening. When you feel the thoughts of what you are doing build up, you are thinking too much about where you are. And it is much like in a dream. When you realize you are in a dream, 9 times out of 10, you immediately awaken out of it. So you must...
Yes.
allow yourself, and this is very difficult and it takes much patience and much practice, but you must allow yourself to slip in the meditation and to allow it to drift you away as if you are floating in a river. And if you think to yourself, ah, I am in a river, you immediately begin to struggle and you fight against the current when it is truly with the current that you wish to flow.
That is a good metaphor.
What if there is a waterfall?
The waterfall is part of the experience. It can bring you to another level.
Even if you are not in a barrel?
You are not in a physical waterfall. And the strong sensations, the pushing, the being thrown underwater, they are beautiful in their own fashion, as beautiful as they are harsh.
Perhaps I am just taking the metaphor too literally. I'm just... can't find myself not worrying about the temperature of the water in hypothermia, especially in this weather. But let's move on.
Did you see that scene in Avatar when that beast was chasing the Avatar, the human Avatar, when he was just on that planet, Pandora? And the waterfall really saved him because he had the faith to jump, and that beast wouldn't jump, go after him. So he was safe. And the beast and that all that ferocity wouldn't follow him down. It's almost like he had the faith, you know, and he didn't have a barrel.
That's interesting.
Well, let's try to bring in another face with us to join our circle. Caller, are you with us?
Bulibanji.
Bulibanji. Welcome, Arthur Rainbow Beam.
Yeah, that's me. Man, really great discussion today, guys. It got me thinking quite a bit about energy cultivation, actually. Part of it, just the show and discussions I've been having. And, you know, I got this conversation about electric cars and is that viable for the future? And it's a good question because, you know, batteries have an impact on the Earth also. You have to throw them away somewhere. And what's so interesting to me, though, like why I put my eggs in that basket is because electricity is sort of an abstraction, you know? Like, who knows where that power could be coming from? It's like when your car is just coupled with combustion, that's very different from, like, electricity. It could just come from anywhere, right?
Yes, and also if you are driving in an electric car, the eggs in the basket won't break because it's slower than a combustion engine car.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, I'm following.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, people could, I mean, there's all kinds of research, like kite electricity. People could walk around with propeller hats and harness the wind and just sort of distributed, decentralized power. Like, that's all possible, and it could go all into electric cars.
True. I'm still confused. Can we go back? I was just thinking about the statement about putting eggs in baskets. I mean, if you took a dozen eggs that were raw and you put them all in a basket, it seems like that would be a horrible way to carry them. I mean, they'd all break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And perhaps I am focusing on minuscule points here, but I don't believe we can move on with this conversation until we discuss this. Perhaps we wrap the eggs in newspaper?
Yeah, you could kind of do them baked potato style, wrap them in tin foil. That
yes.
might be the insulation they need.
Yes, and I like to bake my eggs as well.
And... Uh-huh. I'm sorry, what are the eggs in this metaphor?
I guess, energy.
So we are wrapping our energy in order to keep it intact.
Yes, exactly. This is why the hybrid cars are not good, in my opinion, because it's like taking your electric egg and mixing it with your gasoline-powered egg, and if they crack, then they believe the outcome is obvious. But if you just have one egg in your basket, like an electric egg or the gasoline egg, it's better.
Yeah, I mean,
unless
you
of
know,
course.
I know we're having fun with this and grooving on it, but in all seriousness, it brings up a pretty good point. Just that, like, you do have to keep your energy, your electricity insulated, and that's a huge source of loss just in the universe, you know, like
true.
High voltage transmission lines and all just your I squared R, just your big drops.
I don't think an egg is fully expressing itself unless it's cracked. The Supans have a tradition of breaking things rebirthing things.
Well, that's the first step of birth, is cracking the egg or fixing an omelet.
So I don't think we should try to protect the eggs too much.
That would be forsaking
predestiny, or that would be predestiny. That would be no free will.
But we're talking about insulating in transportation, in transit. It's just like you want to insulate your electricity before it powers your, 850-watt centrifugal juicer, or whatever tools you're using at breakfast. You want to keep your eggs wrapped before, starting the circle of life or cooking them, poaching the eggs, however, whatever your plans are for the eggs.
Yes,
incubation or cooking, whatever.
Right.
Yes, this is definitely important because the egg which is never opened is never used, but once the egg has become open, it is much more of a transient object.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It is more of a concept at that point.
It's the same with avocados. Once you open it up, very quickly its life begins and it oxidizes and it's exposed to the outside air.
Well, but in my experience, avocados are transient in themselves.
Uh-huh.
Even if you do not open them,
yeah,
they are quick to turn to mush.
Perhaps they are an egg with no shell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, avocados to me have always given me the lesson of using what I have. I know many people, when they are given a gift, they tend to keep it away and not really enjoy it.
Well, you are quite the horticulturist, above the average person, I believe.
Mm. Well, what if we place the eggs in some of the snowfall in a basket and froze them and put them on one of the alien ships and got some information from the higher-ups on the best way for these electronic cars?
Mm-hmm.
The best way for them to not crack the eggs?
Well, in my experience, and speaking as a vocal therapist, I've noticed that the largest problem in my mind with the electric car in the moment is being unable to ascertain its energy, to figure out what its state is based solely on hearing it.
That came up in therapy?
Well, as a vocal therapist, I tend to concentrate on sounds, and I have very sensitive ears, but electric cars do not have that same noise.
Yes, yes, there is
There's a silence about them.
Well, maybe it's a good thing we're still using fossil fuels, because people might be struck down more at the crosswalks if you can't hear the cars coming.
Yes, I believe I have heard that some of these cars have a built-in noise-making device. It is quite ironic, in fact, that they must expend more energy simply to make themselves announced.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it is important, actually, if you become a very powerful individual, spiritually speaking, that you spend some of your energy, warning people of your presence.
Well, and this is exactly my point, is that something which was once a nuisance to all of us has become a necessity for our own safety. And this makes me wonder if this occurs quite often without our understanding or noticing it.
Yes, indeed, a basket could be quite a nuisance to carry around, but perhaps we need it to protect the eggs.
Well, I think the ego has a certain amount of white noise in intermeshed with it, which allows other people to see other people coming at the crosswalk.
Right, the yolk inside the egg.
Inside the basket.
Sort of our fluffy egg white hid surrounding it.
Anybody feel like breakfast?
No, why?
Well, you just keep talking about eggs and getting hungry.
Oh, I understand. Yes, of course. That's pardon me.
It's okay. There's a little restaurant in the South End called Cafe Francesca. They make these really good burrito eggs.
Well, I misunderstood your question, and at times I do feel like breakfast in the sense that I feel like I am awakening and I'm seeing the world for the first time Fresh.
Beautiful.
So,
yeah.
So these eggs are literal eggs, then. I'm really, really having trouble following.
I believe that the metaphor has evoked the image of it itself, of the eggs indeed. So the conversation, although it did not begin of actual eggs, has drifted into them.
So just to be clear, there's no physical basket of eggs in the electric car we're talking about, right?
I mean, it depends if you went grocery shopping.
I'm sorry. I'm just having some trouble keeping up.
Maybe
the metaphors shopping. Have mixed to the
Could
point
be.
That...
Well, I just saw Salvador Dali walk in front of me.
And what exactly is a Salvador Dali walk?
Well, we're talking about eggs, and he's a surrealist artist from the 20th century, and he focused on the egg very much in his
work. So he painted with the egg?
I'm sure he did a lot of things with the egg, but he did render egg in oil and cracked egg.
But if you...
It's interesting. It brings to mind the idea, perhaps this exercise has been completed. I am not sure. But could you not inject an egg with some kind of food dye and then use the egg to paint?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was something called egg tempera during the Renaissance, and that was before oils. In acrylics, obviously, because acrylics are very new. But egg tempera, that was consisted on eggs.
That is very interesting. I think perhaps we should use this paint to portrait Salvador Dali.
There's a lot of patterns in nature that are suitable for painting. I know that some elementary schools will do fish prints. That was something I found really nurturing just growing up. You take maybe a rainbow trout, depending on your region, and just sort of ink it and paste it on the paper and just see those patterns in the scales and the fins and the eye and all of that.
That's interesting.
This artist, Salvador Dali, when did he live?
1915 to 1980.
So he's a fairly modern artist then.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar
Dali.
With...
He's pretty famous. He's like Vincent Van Gogh. He's a character. But I was interested about the rainbow trout. Why are they called rainbow trout? They're silver, aren't they?
They have a little rainbow tinge on the scales. It's
yes,
hard
it
to
is.
See. And actually,
something of an iridescence, I believe.
Yeah, that's the word for it. There's a lot of things in nature that make pretty good art supplies just right out of the box. You know, owl pellets are great sort of sub in for charcoal. And you never quite know what you're going to get. You get different supplies in each one.
And I think this brings us back to the subject of snow and igloos and sculpture.
Actually, in my youth, I used to use my own excretions to make beautiful artwork on the walls.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, urine comes out stale, so...
Aren't you quite limited in the color? Or are you not worried about the color?
Well, that is perhaps not discussion for the air, but there is not that much limit in color when you think of it.
Yep, you are what you eat.
I think if men were to do those oxidization paintings with urine, they would be more abstract expressionist, because there'd be more freedom sort of with the brush.
Ah. That makes some sense, yes.
In fact, I think Andy Warhol had some people doing that for him.
It's good to just take a minute and resonate on that, you know?
Definitely. It is quite impactful.
Okay, everyone. I'm gonna filter out, open up the airwaves. But great being here with you.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes, it was a pleasure.
Yom Kippur.
And as well to you.
Yes, and unfortunately, we are approaching the end of our time here at WMBR.
Very nice talking with you too.
It's been very nice to speak with you as well.
I hope to see you at the runway for our circular ship.
Caller, thank you so much for calling us today and being one with us.
Yes, and I cannot wait until we unite in that mothership which you speak of.
Yes, me too. Thank you both. Take care.
Thank you to all of our previous callers as well, and to all of those that we did not catch. Thank you to my co-hosts.
Thank you for letting me come, Aurora, and thank you to all our listeners out there.
Thank you, Zerno.
Thank you, Aurora. Today's show was wonderful, and as always, I am happy to be one of the many eggs in its lovable, wonderful basket.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. We are Music for Human Beings at WMBR 88.1 in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We are on every Friday at 7 p.m. Please tune in and enjoy the resonance. Namaste.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
He came from outer space to save the human race. A creature with a dream to entertain the children of the night. The rest, as they say, became history.
Magogo. The Show. Saturdays, 8 p.m. WMBR, 88.1 FM, Cambridge.
He came from outer space to save the human race.